please get out of my Van Halen t-shirt before you jinx the band and they break up.
I think too much, you can have too much of anything, you know what I mean?
You are listening to the Night and Day podcast, featuring the interview archives of Western New York music writer Tom Jennings. Tom has interviewed some of the biggest names in music and entertainment, and now you can enjoy these never-before-heard interviews. Here's your host, Tom Jennings.
Welcome again to Night and Day. We have a very special episode. We haven't done one like this before, so I hope it's something you enjoy. I am presenting three clips from three different national recording artists that talk about some somewhat legendary stories, or at least some topics that hopefully people will be interested in. We get started with Mickey Thomas of Jefferson Starship fame. And he talks about the song "We Built This City," and at some point along the way, "We Built This City" was tagged as one of the worst songs ever, or the worst song. I think if you do a Google search, it comes up that way. It's a song that's often misunderstood. Mickey talks a bit about that, and then I follow up with a second piece with Brad Gillis of Night Ranger. Brad will talk about when he joined Ozzy Osbourne's band not long after the death of Randy Rhoads. So very difficult time for the Ozzy crew at that point, and it's interesting to hear the whole situation from Brad's perspective as he came in a little bit later, you know, not long after Randy had passed away and then had to fill some huge shoes, to put it mildly. And then finally we'll wrap up with probably one of my favorite interviews that I've ever done, with a guy named Eric Martin. You've likely heard of him as the lead singer of Mr. Big, but Eric, just the interview itself, and hopefully at some point I'll be able to post the whole thing. It ran like 45 minutes long. Super candid, just a really easy guy to talk to. I don't know if he's written a book, but he probably should, because he's such an engaging, just generally likable guy, and looks at things in a way that are just, I mean, with such humility, with a humility that's refreshing, especially from a rock star. You know, everybody thinks that rock stars are supposed to be these egomaniacs. Thankfully, I don't run into a lot of that in my travels. But Eric talks about auditioning for Van Halen, for Toto, for Foreigner, for Rainbow. I mean, imagine getting any one of those gigs, or even being on the brink of getting any one of those gigs. And just the way he tells it, it just gives you an insider's look at kind of what goes on in the music industry when it comes to replacing a band member. And again, I think anybody that's ever been in a band or had to audition or even been in a kind of a regional or local music scene will probably appreciate a lot of the things that Eric sort of went through and struggled with, but I'll leave the details to him. So we'll get started. These interview clips will sort of roll into another, and I'll come back and talk to you a little bit more at the end, and that's it. So let's get started with our first clip from Mickey Thomas of Starship.
I don't know. I guess it's been 15, 16, 17 years ago now or something. You know, when they were kind of, it became sort of trendy for a while to have these worst of lists, you know, like the worst guitar solo ever, or the worst song. And so Blender Magazine kind of put "We Built This City" at the top of their list of the worst songs ever recorded or something like that. And it was just one of those things that a lot of people seemed to pick up on. And we just kind of laughed about it because, you know, we thought, you know, it's ridiculous to think that's the worst song ever recorded. I mean, are you kidding me? It's a great song, you know? And again, as you mentioned, a lot of people who criticize the song obviously don't really take the time to listen to it, to listen to the lyric and the verse, you know, because, you know, I kind of joke around. I tell people when we were recording the song, when I was doing the vocal in the studio, I thought I was singing a protest song, you know? As you mentioned, you know, it was kind of a protest against what was happening as far as what was known as corporate rock at the time, and business kind of taking over rock and roll. and people still trying to tell kids, you know, where to go and what to listen to, and well, you can't have your rock and roll club over there because the music's too loud for the neighborhood and we're going to shut it down. So it was really just a protest against all of that, saying like, hey, you know, like, screw you. Don't you remember? We built this city on rock and roll, man. And I was always singing the song. My point of view when I was singing was as if I was just kind of the everyman, you know, the kid in the audience, the fan, you know, the kid who really believed in rock and roll, and that rock and roll and music was something that would get people through difficult times in their life, you know, and help them form an identity of their own. And to me, that's what the song was about. And so, you know, a lot of critics, I think, looked at it as if we were saying, like, we, the Starship, built this city, San Francisco, on rock and roll. And it was, in our eyes, it was never meant to be about that at all. It was much more universal theme.
Yeah, and I interviewed Ann and Nancy Wilson over the years, and I guess the song was originally pitched to them because it was a Bernie Taupin composition, and guy's written all these great songs for Elton John. And I think in some ways she kind of, you know, wouldn't necessarily go on the record, but they sort of regret that they didn't pick up on the song because it really did turn out to be a huge hit.
Oh yeah, and it's one of those songs too. It really has staying power, you know, and it was, even when it was originally popular in the mid 80s, little kids always loved that song for some reason, you know, 4, 5, 6 year olds just related to that song. And so that still happens, you know, like my 4-year-old grandson loves that song, you know. So it keeps finding new audiences every generation, you know, kind of, you know, discoveries we built this city. And so it really has had some nice staying power. And, you know, you mentioned that Ann and Nancy, and what was funny about that, too, is We Built This City was number one, and then right after that, Sarah went to number one. And when Sarah was number one, we got knocked out of number one by These Dreams by Heart, which was also written by Bernie Taupin and Martin Page, who wrote We Built This City. And I sang background vocals on it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So it was kind of trippy.
Yeah. Well, I think the story is they gave a choice between the two songs, and they went with These Dreams. So it worked out for both of you.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that was Mickey Thomas of Starship. I'm not going to fill this with a lot of fluff, so we'll shift right back over into Brad Gillis of Night Ranger and Ozzy Osbourne fame. I've got to wrap it up because I know our time's a little bit short, but I didn't want to leave without asking a question again, going back to that era of Ozzy Osbourne, where you had to step in and fill in for Randy Rhoads. I mean, that must have been kind of a crazy time. I read Rudy Sarzo's book, and it seemed like those guys were just a hot mess. I mean, what do you remember about that whole situation, and are able to kind of reflect on it now and really soak in the moment, or was it just one of those things that you just had to do at the time?
Well, I was surprised that I even got the call for the audition, and that's one big long story in itself. But when I did get the call from Sharon, and she put Ozzy on the phone, and he told me to write down these 18 songs to learn, you know, I told him I only knew like 3 or 4, and I had 2 days at home to learn what I could, and then I flew to New York and sat in my hotel room in a different city every day, you know, practicing, and then I'd go see the show at night when they had the intern guitar player, Bernie Torme, sitting in before I was able to join the band. And standing at the soundboard, the sold-out shows, watching, you know, them play on stage with that big castle was just, oh, mesmerizing to me. And I couldn't even believe I was, you know, I had the shot to do this gig. But, you know, great memories I do remember from that tour was, you know, playing the King Biscuit Flower Hour nationwide after being with the band for 2 weeks, and that kind of upped my game, and people were able to hear me and realize that I was, you know, trying to pull it off. And then, of course, you know, heading to Irvine, California to film our live show that got broadcast on MTV, and they made a video out of it. And then, of course, going to New York to play two nights at the Ritz to release that Speak of the Devil's record. But later on, after that, you know, Rudy Sarzo decided to quit to go with Quiet Riot since they got a record deal. And then the offer came into our band, Night Ranger, that if I were to come back to the band, we would have a record deal too. And you know, things were pretty loose over in the Aussie camp, and which is kind of hard for me, you know, not being around my bros back at home, but I spent a couple of years getting a record together, trying to release our own thing. So I rolled the dice, and sure enough, came back to Night Ranger, and next thing you know, they were in October 1982, they released Speak of the Devil and Night Ranger's Dawn Patrol the same week in October, and the start of 1983, I jumped right on a tour with Night Ranger, and that's where it all started. And we ended up doing pretty much 200 shows a year, and the other, for 9 months, and the other 3 months we'd go in and cut a new record.
Yeah.
And it got to the point where, you know, after, you know, six, seven years doing that in 1989, we all just needed a break, and that's when we split up. But luckily, in early 96, you know, the Japanese came to us with an offer for a record deal and a tour if we got the original band back together. So we did that and went over there and kind of had to build it up from the get-go again. And things moved around with the lineup and the band. And now, in 2017, man, we're doing great and playing all over the place and still releasing records.
Well, there you have it from Brad Gillis. I hope you enjoyed that clip. And now, I guess, you know, kind of like a concert, you have a couple opening acts to set the stage for what is the best clip of the show, in my humble opinion. And this is Eric Martin giving you a little bit of insight into the music industry and what it takes to get a lead singer's job in a national band. And you as a singer, I mean, an incredible voice. I was reading through some stuff, and maybe you can elaborate on it, that at different points in your career, you were either approached or auditioned for bands like Van Halen, Toto, and Rainbow.
Hmm. Well, you want me to talk about that?
Oh, yeah, if you would, that'd be great.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, the Van Halen thing was, I had just released a solo album, on Capitol, and it was doing okay. No, I had just released it, and I was all excited about it. But it was, you know, and I was into the direction I was into. It was like, but I never had a face. I was kind of an R&B singer, kind of a middle of the road rock singer. When I was younger, I sang a lot more metal. But you know, this was like the direction I was going for. And Danny Kortchmar, who produced my album, who just produced Building the Perfect Beast for Don Henley, and my whole record kind of sounded like Building the Perfect Beast production, and it almost sounded like B-sides, you know. But he went to New York and he met up with Eddie Van Halen, Edward Van Halen, as he told me, don't call me Eddie. He met up with him at the David Letterman show, and he gave my record and said, "Hey man, if you're looking for a singer, man, this kid's great." So I got a phone call. You know, I got had to be when was it, 85 or something, and said, "You know, hey, this is Eddie Van Halen, Edward Van Halen, and I hate your record, but I love your voice." And I want you to come down and, you know, talk with me and maybe, like, you know, sing something. We'll jam in my studio. Okay, here it is. You know, it's called 5150 in Coldwater Canyon. Anyway, it was surreal. Blew my mind. And I remember for about a week I was going, God, I'm in Van Halen. You know, I didn't go out and buy a car or anything like that, but I was, you know, telling my wife and my friends, going, I could be in Van Halen. And they're all telling me, wow, David Lee Roth, and now you. And I'm like, yeah, that doesn't sound right, does it? You know, and that's a mighty big clown shoes to fill, you know. And I went down to L.A., And I was actually with, this is kind of totally seems like a, this could make a musical, but I was with Neil Sean, and we were doing some soundtrack or something, and I was in the airport, and I saw Sammy Hagar, and Neil goes, "Hey, man, Eric's going down to talk to Eddie, man, about getting in Van Halen." And I remember Sammy going, "You know what? I got that gig. Yeah, I'm going to get that gig." And I'm talking to him, "Did you already audition?" He goes, "I don't have to audition. I know those guys." And it was, I looked at Sammy Hagar, and I thought David Lee Roth, and I'm like, these guys, they long for the spotlight. You know, so do I, but man, they bathe in it, you know? And, they were entertainers. And I didn't feel like I was. I felt the little, you know, I felt the cold shiver go up my spine. And I'm telling you, man, I like to, you know, tell you like the, you know, a great ending to this story, but I basically chickened out on it. I was in L.A. I was in a hotel that was maybe a mile from his 5150. I could have went there and just said, like, I didn't make it. But it was, I remember it was raining, and then he goes, "Well, are you coming or what?" I'm like, "Nah, you know, I don't really feel that good." He goes, "Well, I'll call you later." Call me about two or three times, and he goes, "Well, you know, hey, maybe we'll get together some other day, some other time. Hey, nice talking to you." And that was it, man.
So you never, actually went to the audition?
No.
Wow. That's incredible.
And guess what? How many millions of times I had to, you know, tell that story and have, like, guys on the other end, just like yourself, go, "How disappointing." But guess what? I wanted it because I knew it was like I was in a tiny little fishbowl, and I was going to be in the gigantic. I was going to be in the ocean,
right.
You know. But I got too scared.
So when Hagar left, did you ever consider pursuing it again? I mean, you and Sharon had very similar voices.
No, absolutely not. Hey, Eddie. It's Eric again. Yeah, right. We're like, you know, you know. And but after that, I was a solo artist, and I, like I said, and I on that album that Danny Kortchmar produced, Steve Lukather had played on it, and we became friends. And he asked me to join Toto. Now, I wasn't about to make the same mistake, and I thought, now, Toto might be good for me. It's the R&B and the rock together, and I could pull that off. And I had only done it, like, maybe a handful of years, but I felt pretty confident that I could do it. And I went down to L.A., or up to L.A., whatever it is, and I jammed with the band for about a week, and I was in. I was like, you know, "Hold the Line," Africa, Georgie Porgy, 99, you know, all these great songs and singing in the way. And I remember going to dinner with them a couple nights, and their last dinner was at a place called Michelli's, and God, I remember sitting in this booth, like, you know, like the red plastic seat or something like that, the whole band sitting around this one table, and Jeff was outside on the telephone. And I go, "Hey, is Jeff going to join us?" And he goes, remember David Page going, "You know, it's just not going to work out." And then, like, you know, then I went home, and Lukather called me up and said, "You know, Jeff just thinks you're too green." Oh, God.
So was Bobby Kimmel still with him at that point, or had he got left the band? Is it Bobby Kimmel who was the other lead singer there? Or?
You know, Bobby, you know, Bobby had that, you know, little altercation. And I don't want to, like, talk bad about Bobby, but he, you know, he had a little episode where he was, it was me.
Wow.
And then you know, then it wasn't me, and it was Joe Williams right after that.
Yeah.
I know, but that bummed me out the most, because I kind of felt like I could do this. I would be comfortable in my own shoes, because it was like I kind of had kind of had a voice like Bobby at the time. And then I had my gravel kind of too. So I kind of felt like, you know, I don't have to step in somebody else's shoes. And like, I thought about it for so many years going, yeah, I just didn't have the balls like Gary Cherone to actually do it, you know, for Van Halen. But for Toto, I thought I could do it. And the rainbow thing happened years and years ago when I was like 21. My manager had said, like, there was a, you know, Richie Blackmore had wanted a singer for Rainbow, or this band. And maybe it was Rainbow at the time, and that just never happened. Passed. And, hey, you know, I always used to look at people, like actors that turned down roles like the Titanic or, you know, Deer Hunter or something like that, you know, and I used to go, God, why'd they turn that down? And it's, you know, I was in the same boat. It's like, you know, sometimes you just don't feel like you're good enough. And I didn't feel good enough for Van Halen. I definitely felt good enough for Toto, and Rainbow didn't happen. And then Foreigner.
Wow.
Right before my children were born, Mick Jones called me and said he really wanted me in Foreigner. And he sent me, you know, these backing tracks for Waiting for a Girl and Urgent and Cold as Ice and Feels Like the First Time, like real Foreigner backing tracks. And I did a bunch of demos and I sent it to him and I was totally, you know, going to make the move. And then it's not that I chickened out. I just didn't want to leave my children at the time. And I had nothing going for myself, man. I had a little money in the bank. This is after Mr. Big. And it was, I could have definitely, you know, supported my family in a great way, but I just didn't. I heard all these like horror stories from my friend Jack Blades and guys who were married and they were also married to the music business, and they didn't spend the good quality time with their kids and or even see births and all that and miss birthday parties. And I'm not, you know, hey, we're gonna start to cry in the middle of this interview, but I just didn't I didn't
want to
go.
All right, well, great. Well, again, this is the first time that we've tried to use this format. I hope that you enjoyed it. I hope that you found these clips to be insightful, funny, entertaining, any of those types of things. Want to give a special thanks to everybody who's been listening to this podcast and supporting it in any way, shape, or form. Just listening to it supports it, trust me. If you could leave a review on Apple iTunes, I'm still waiting for my very first one. Hopefully it's a good one, but you can go ahead and be honest as we get this show kind of, you know, worked out and make sure that it sounds professional and that people enjoy it and all that stuff. My contact information is on the show page, so if you want to get in touch with me, by all means, feel free to do so, and we will put something together for next week. I've got a couple interviews on tap, one with it goes off the rock and roll path for a little while with Christian Bush of Sugarland. And then after that, I'll probably be working on some interview stuff with former members of Utopia, Chasm Sultan and Willie Wilcox. I've got a couple archived interviews from Chasm and a long one from Willie. And hopefully we'll get a chance to maybe even do a new interview with Chasm. I put the word out to him. Haven't heard back yet. He's got some shows coming up in January. But until next time, thanks very much for joining me. I'll see you at my next concert.